There. Hi. This past winter, from February 9th to March 7th, I was in Mongolia with a team of four guys from CLBI. So part of the second year leadership program there is a 1 month cross-cultural experience. So the four of us were chosen to go to Mongolia and do a little bit of mission work there, I guess, and just experience, I guess, how God is at work there and get a taste of missions, I guess, and just an opportunity to experience their culture that way. So Mongolia is south of Russia and north of China. It was a socialist communist government regime until 1993, when it was liberated and is kind of a democratic republic, kind of like Canada or the States now. So it's an interesting dynamic visiting a country that's, I guess, basically been free to do what it wants for a relatively short amount of time. So along with that, and being in the heart of Asia, there's a lot of elements of an honor and shame culture there, and things like that. And it's very law heavy. So even teaching at some of the Bible colleges that we got to assist with English classes at, it was interesting to hear just some of the people's perspectives and share, the other half of the gospel that we get in the New Testament, where Jesus came and forgives us of all our sins. And to some people, it was actually a shock that, you know, there was no sin that they could commit that God wouldn't forgive them for, and that they could be good enough people to actually get into heaven someday. So our first week, we were in the capital city of Ulaanbaatar. So that is very central for the country, I guess. It has a population of 1.5 million people, and the entire population of the country is 4 million. So it's a fairly major hub for the entire country. While we were there, the first week we did some orientation and language training, and kind of just got settled into our apartment and things like that, familiarized ourselves with our neighborhood. And it was already in our first week that we could really see God's provision for us while we were there. There was not a lot going on that was planned before we left, so we were just hooked up with this organization called JCS, or Joint Christian Services. So basically every day we would just walk down to the office and see what they had for us to do, and usually it wasn't much. And during our debrief, about the third day we were there, we were kind of just starting to get a little bit frustrated, and it was like, we came all this distance and we're just here doing nothing, we're just sitting in the office, and we just prayed that God would start to give us opportunities to do things. And like immediately the next day, we were just like ran into people that had organizations we could help out with and do things that way. And it was just incredibly evident to see how much more God worked if we would give him the room to work, where sometimes here in Canada, I feel like we have everything so scheduled and planned out and just everything organized ourselves that there isn't really the opportunity for God to show up. And over there, it was just really evident that he would. After our first week, our team split up into two groups of two. So myself and our team leader, Derek, went about 6 hours into the countryside to run a hockey program and assist some missionaries out there. And Joel and Mackenzie, who you might have met here before, stayed back in Ulaanbaatar and worked with English studies at the Mongolian International University and a couple of high schools and a Bible college. So while we were in Chinggis City, is the place we were doing the hockey program, we were there for 1 week, and during the days we would run kind of just training for a skills competition. We'd do that two sessions a day, usually once in the morning before the kids would leave for school, and then once in the afternoon after they were done. And in the evenings we would do kind of just a fun hockey thing. So we did like a father's son game and just some things like that. And it was really awesome to see how involved the Mongolians were with their entire families. Alcoholism is a very big problem in Mongolia, and it was really awesome to see that lots of these families that were broken and where the dynamics were not great, and these dads didn't even know how to skate or play hockey or anything, would just come out for the evening and kind of walk around on the ice with their kids. And it was just really awesome to see how involved they wanted to be that way. It was really cool. And then on Saturday, the last day we were there, we ran like an official skills competition for the team we were training and got some trophies made and prizes and things like that. And it was really incredible to see the kids that were anxious to learn the whole week, how much they actually like got better during the week we were there, and the ones that were just kind of there having fun. I mean, they had fun also, but it was really cool to just kind of come in for a week and almost just train and disciple these kids a little bit, and then see how much they grew and improved. And it was a really cool image, I guess, for sort of what Jesus did while he was here on earth, how he came alongside and taught people and discipled them and gave them lessons and then kind of just left again. And I'll probably never see any of those kids again, but it's just really cool to know that you were kind of there for a little part of their life and just how much of an impact we were able to have on them, just being foreigners in their country, that we would come over there and just skate with them for a few hours a day. They were just so happy to see us, and it was just a really memorable experience. After that week, when we were in the countryside, the four of us were back in Ulaanbaatar for the remaining close to 2 weeks, I guess it was. And we did various different things while we were there. Myself and Derek were kind of able to get plugged into the same schools where Mackenzie and Joel had been teaching English classes. So we had some really great opportunities there. Even though Mongolia does have a free government system, you're not really allowed to use like a platform as a teacher to push a Christian worldview. So it was interesting because we were guests there. We were able to do that from a Christian perspective, and the teachers weren't. So this at the Mongolian International University, the lady we were paired up with there, she just gave us her entire philosophy class to teach on because we were guests. And because we were guests, we were able to talk about our Christian beliefs. So there was a lot of people in the class had questions like, well, I don't know if there is a God or what there is to religion or what happens after we die, because no one knows what happens after we die. And because we were guests, we were able to share the gospel that way and really, I guess, drive home the message of what Jesus did while he was here on earth for all of us, which is something that they may have never heard before. Coming out of the socialist communist era, there was Christianity, basically all religion was outlawed. So I believe it's about 3% of Mongolia is Christian right now. The rest is either primarily Buddhist or there's lots of shamanism also. So very much so, like the idea of superstitions or, you know, if I do this, I'll get this result. And you'd see lots of evidence of that driving through the countryside. You know, there would be shamanist posts on top of hills and things like that with so many horse manes braided together because it had some meaning that way. So it was really awesome, I guess, that we were able to, just bring the gospel into that. And it was surprising how many people the gospel kind of just made sense for. It was like you could just kind of explain it, and it kind of spoke for itself, which was really cool. Because in our training, that was something we were kind of taught for, is we can't really convince people to become Christians. We don't have to fight for God. He's powerful enough that he can work in people's lives and their hearts, and all we can do is be Christ's ambassadors and just kind of present that saving message and let them do with it what they like. And it was really awesome to see how good the results were that we got from that. So it looks like we got our slides working. While we were teaching at one of the universities too, aside from the philosophy class, We were given two different slots on experiential learning and the importance of that. So Mackenzie, who did summer teams with CLBI last year, knew very in-depth the parable of the prodigal son. So it was really awesome. He just got an entire classroom slot to just explain that and give all the cultural context, which he already knew. And it was really relatable for a lot of them, I think, because the Mongolian culture would be a lot closer to the biblical culture than what we have. And just to explain that story super in depth and give a lot of examples and things like that, it really just clicked with a lot of people too. And it was awesome to see how God used him in that role. And with our slot for the experiential learning, it was really great just to see, just basically play games with the students and just get them to realize how important it is, like team dynamics and group dynamics and things like that, and how important it can be to work together rather than being very individualistic. Another thing we did while we were there, this picture is taken kind of from the top of the hill on the south side of Ulaanbaatar. It's in what's called the Gare District, so what we would probably refer to as sort of like a ghetto neighborhood, I guess, just kind of a poorer area of the city. So Mongolians live in gares if they can't afford a house or apartment, which is, we would call it like a yurt, basically a round felt tent, which comes out of all the herding and kind of living in the countryside that's there. They're very easy to assemble and disassemble to follow your herds and livestock with. So even in the city, people still live in them sometimes. And it was really cool, the family we got to work with that are in charge of kind of running an assistance program in this Gare district. They're just a really awesome family, and we got to follow them around and see some of the work they're doing and visit with a few families that they're assisting with, and just kind of to visit their homes and just be an encouragement to them that way was really awesome to experience. Along with the Gare district that the Celine family is running, they also run a girls' shelter. And that was really, it was a feeling of mixed emotions visiting there, because it's a bunch of girls, probably all 10 years old and under, I'd say. And you know that all of them have come from a house where there's some kind of abuse or unhealthy dynamic, but you would never have been able to guess it, just the sheer amount of joy that they had and how happy they were just to have what they had, even if they weren't very fortunate. It was really just heartwarming to see, and just to help them with their English and just play games with them. We got to visit that about the third last day we were there, and each and every one of us on our team said, we wish you would have found that way earlier in the trip so we could have went back there a few more times, because just the amount of love and joy in that place was really incredible. Another thing we did while we were there is, along with a lot of the missionaries that are there, there's local churches that some of them would go to, but also there is what's called international church. So that would be basically just a service that's in English for foreigners in the country, more or less, in the capital city. So we were able to go to that church service a couple of times, which was really cool, and got to meet some people that way. And also through the youth group that the international church had. So it would be for a lot of like missionary kids that were from Canada and the States here, kind of all around. And it was, I guess, kind of more like a taste of home, just being with a lot of people that were native English speakers and just being a fresh face for them and getting to do stuff that you would do at a youth group here with them there. And it was a really good time too. We got to teach them some of the tools that we had learned in Bible college about just kind of just shapes, I guess, that we learned for helping to explain the gospel and why Christians do what they do. And they were all really receptive to that and asked lots of questions and were just really anxious to learn. And they made us feel as a team really valued, like they wanted us there. Whereas sometimes here you can go to a youth event or at college, I guess, and you'd be leading it and you could tell some of the kids don't really want to be there or, oh, they're too cool for this. But over there, they were all just really excited and receptive and really made us feel like our time was valued and like what we were doing was productive, which was also, I think, God at work in that way. Also, while we were there, I got to visit a farm on the last day. So coming, I guess, in Mongolia, there's a lot of herding, and their climate is quite similar to ours, except it would be even drier. So traditionally, what would happen is you would, if you were a herder, you would just be grazing your herd on the prairies, on the plains. And then in winter, you wouldn't have any hay cut or anything. So you would just, your animals would become just very weak and malnourished. And usually more than once every 10 years, Mongolia would have what they call a winter disaster, which is when they get enough snow that the animals expel more energy pawing through all the snow to get to the grass than what they actually get back from the grass that they're grazing. So they've been known to lose, like, the country has lost 40% of their animals in just like a few months if they have too much snow. So there was an American family around 15 years ago went over to Mongolia with this idea of a model dairy farm. So it would be the idea of basically family size scale, so 20 milk cows, and then just educating the people on things like just literally cutting hay for the winter and irrigating and things like that, just so that their animals would have enough nutrition to keep producing milk through the winter so the family could have income. And then also if there was a winter disaster, that they wouldn't just completely lose their entire herd and then be looking for government handouts in the spring. So the farm that I visited was the first one that this American family started. So this is a picture of their irrigation field, which is 40 hectares. So it's irrigated from a well. You can see it's kind of right coming out of a kind of hilly mountain region. So his well could produce 25 liters per second. So he's kind of got this huge concrete pool that he could fill up, and then kind of he'd drain that along with his well for irrigating. That's the inside of the milking barn that this American family made, and it's quite similar to what we would have here. Like, it's all really well ventilated and concrete and then tiled where, like, the feed would go, and it was just, you can tell it was really well built and there was a lot of thought put into it. There's just a picture of, that would be his primary tractor. They have lots of older vehicles and farming equipment still from when they were communist socialists that was just left by the Russians. So lots of it you can actually still get parts for. It's kind of just really cool to see. So his tractor would be, I would say it's really comparable to like a 4020 John Deere, and that would be basically what he used for everything there on the farm. On the right, you can't really see in the picture, but it's basically his refrigerator. So there's not really power anywhere in Mongolia except in the cities. So this farm was just completely more or less off the grid, coal heat and things like that. So for refrigeration, it's just a concrete trough that he would set his milk cans in and then just keep water passing through from his well. It was cold enough coming out of the ground that he can keep milk for as long as he needs. And usually the truck would come from the city every 3 days to pick that up. So along with that, this model worked so well that the president of Mongolia actually came and visited the farm. And in Mongolia, the government still owns the majority of the land coming out of the communist socialist era. So if you're a Mongolian resident and you were born in Mongolia, basically, if no one has claimed a piece of land that you want, you just put a fence up around it and apply to the government, and you're almost guaranteed that you'll just be able to get get that given to you as your piece of land. And the president of Mongolia visited this model dairy farm and saw how well it was working and how efficient it was, that just like one family could run it. This one here that the American family has gone now, it's just a man and his wife are running it, the entire thing. And the president told this American family that if you'll like teach the Mongolian people how to do this, just like how to do this so it's efficient and it works well, he said, I'll give you the land anywhere in the country that you want just to do this again and just so that the Mongolian people can have a better life. The Mongolians are very ambitious to try what's working other places in the world, and if they can make it work there too and work well, they'll do that. We saw another slideshow about a different farming program where they had actually got a container of alfalfa seed from here on the prairies, just because our climates are that similar, and it actually worked really well there. It ended up being, they kind of marketed it that it had to be on irrigation for their climate, but they had really positive results with just selling that and then using it for hay. And the last day we were there, I guess, we had a bit of a cultural day. So we got to visit the Genghis Khan National Park, basically. So Genghis Khan, for the history buffs, was in, I think, either the 11 or the 1400s, I just forget, basically conquered half the world, to put it bluntly. So, and he was a Mongolian. So he is still very revered and respected by all the Mongolian people. So in the picture there, you can kind of see the statue to him up in the corner. People would go as far as to actually come to this provincial park or national park and actually like worship him. They consider him a deity, kind of along with the shamanism there. Other people who don't consider him a deity, there's still just everyone has a lot of respect for the powerful leader that he was and things like that. So it was cool to kind of just visit the park, and all of us got to hold eagles, and then we went horseback riding. Kind of coming out of what Genghis Khan did also, Mongolians are very famous for their horses. They're really strong and have a very high endurance level. Even though they're quite a bit smaller than ours, they're about the size of like a donkey that we'd have here, which was kind of funny to ride them, but it was actually a lot of fun too. Yeah, and that was about the summary of what we did. We did a little bit of hiking there too, and got to check that out. And that's our group photo. So I'd just like to thank everyone here for your prayers and support. God's hand of provision was very evident for us, whether it be with protecting us from sickness or other things like that along the way. It was really cool. And I know there was a number of people from here who supported us financially, and I'd like to thank you for that, because CLBI wouldn't be able to make these trips possible without that. And God provided for us quite well that way too. The school gave us a budget of $3,500 American, and the four of us were able to spend the month there on under $900. So we're really grateful for that too. So thanks.